Virginia breeze. I'm living in the sweet Virginia breeze.
Lord. This is Louis Rogers, founder and CEO of Capital Square Realty Advisors. Welcome to the Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors. Capital Square sponsors tax-advantaged real estate investments. First, Section 1031 exchange programs for tax deferral. Capital Square's 1031 exchange programs use the Delaware Statutory Trust, or DST, structure we have discussed in prior shows. The DST structure has been approved by the IRS and Treasury in a published revenue ruling. Second, Opportunity Zone funds for tax deferral and exclusion of capital gains under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. By investing in a qualified Opportunity Zone fund, investors can defer and permanently exclude capital gains from any asset, stocks, businesses, other assets, and even real estate. And a real estate investment trust, a REIT as we call it, to acquire apartment communities from the Southeast to Texas for stable income and growth. The first REIT property is in Midlothian, not far from Capital Square's headquarters in Richmond. REITs are an excellent vehicle for regular folks to invest in real estate. And the icing on the cake, REIT dividends are tax favored. Capital Square is the investment manager and sponsor of 95 investment programs with over 130 properties nationwide. That equates to well over $3 billion of real estate. In Virginia, Capital Square sponsors and manages 17 properties for DST 1031 programs with an investment cost of approximately $1 billion. These programs are designed primarily for Section 1031 exchange investors. And 4 Opportunity Zone projects in the Scotts Addition neighborhood of Richmond, designed for investors seeking to defer and exclude capital gains of any type under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Look at the construction cameras on Capital Square's website to see the activity. It's amazing. New projects are coming out of the ground with the first tenants taking possession this fall. New Class A apartments with mixed-use retail components. It's amazing. Look at the web cameras. Capital Square on Virginia. We have numerous new acquisitions in the pipeline and will continue to invest aggressively in Virginia. Everyone, please welcome Professor Robert McNabb to the Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors. First, should I call you Professor, Robert, or Bob?
Bob will work. Thank you.
Great, Bob. Wonderful. Unemployment segues into a not-so-pleasant topic, the COVID-19 pandemic. It seems that Virginia got it right. We have the lowest death toll in the South. We're largely vaccinated, but the economy is still lagging. Is that because of the great resignation of people who don't want to work? Or is there something else going on why the economy is lagging when there's demand? There's just not supply of labor to fill it.
Mm. So to frame the conversation, we have to actually go back to a time prior to COVID. And that may seem like a decade ago to your listeners, because every time we turn around, it's COVID this, COVID that. But we have to avoid recency bias, right? We have to avoid the most recent thing dominating our perspective. If we look at Virginia's economic performance of the decade prior to the COVID-19 recession, it lagged that of the United States. And what do I mean? It means if we look at growth in jobs, growth in individual employment, growth in gross domestic product, Virginia was lagging behind the United States. Why? Well, you have to delve into the metro areas in Virginia, and what you see is Northern Virginia, Richmond performing well, Charlottesville performing well. But remember, the urban crescent, more than 75% of economic activity in Virginia is Northern Virginia, Richmond, and Hampton Roads. And Hampton Roads essentially did not grow over the previous decade prior to the pandemic. So you have an anchor dragging down economic growth in the Commonwealth. And then, of course, we have Virginia.
Is that due to the military flatlining and not growing, or?
Well, at first, from approximately 2011 to 2015, we had the Budget Control Act and amendments, which essentially capped defense spending, which is the largest input into the Hampton Roads economy. So if you think of the economy of Virginia Beach, Newport News, Norfolk, et cetera, about $4 out of every $10 is touched in some way by the Department of Defense and federal government. So decisions in Washington drive economic activity in the region.
You say 4 in 10? My math is not so good, but that's 40%?
Approximately 40% of gross domestic product in Hampton Roads is either a direct result of DOD spending or an indirect result of DOD federal spending.
That's a surprisingly large number.
It is the highest amongst metro areas in the United States with populations greater than 1 million.
That's as exciting as when we had our discussion about the ports. 1 in 10 jobs are impacted by our ports, which while you're on Tidewater, the ports really drive that economy.
So if you think about an economy in Hampton Roads that's driven by tourism, DOD spending, and the port, the first half of the decade, DOD spending contracted slightly and then started to grow slowly. So there was not fuel in terms of the economic engine. But then in the second half of the decade prior to 2020, DOD spending started to tick up. And previously, this meant that economic growth in Hampton Roads would typically accelerate as well. And it actually outpaced that of the United States. This time it didn't happen. And if you look at the data, what it suggests is that their private sector job creation was essentially stagnant from 2007 to 2020 in the region. From 2007, prior to the Great Recession, to 2020, prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, Hampton Roads added approximately 25,000 private sector jobs. Basically nothing. When you think about it in that context, it shows why the growth in Virginia was slower than the United States, because when you have 20% of your economy essentially not growing, it's very hard for the rest of the economy to grow faster. So
Northern Virginia was the engine for growth, and Richmond's usually very stable.
Yeah. So if you think about the story, we had, Northern Virginia dominates economic activity in the Commonwealth, followed by Richmond and Hampton Roads. If you think about the distribution of activity over time, it's been shifting north and east. And in fact, if you look at the population center of Virginia, it used to be west of Richmond. Now it's heading towards Fredericksburg. In terms of economic activity, it's the same thing. We're seeing this locus of activity move towards that I-95 corridor.
What about some of the smaller places like Blacksburg and Winchester?
Well, Blacksburg and Winchester are good news stories. Blacksburg is a good news story because their ability to attract venture capital. So they've been attracting increasing levels of venture capital over time, which tends to suggest they're becoming more innovative, that they are going to have higher levels of job growth over time. If you look at Winchester, Winchester is closely tied to Northern Virginia. And so what we've seen is out-migration from Northern Virginia and arrivals into Winchester, which has lifted median incomes in Winchester and population in Winchester. And now you have new employers going into Winchester because of its proximity to Northern Virginia and Washington, D.C. But that creates a whole new set of problems in terms of economic development, because now Winchester has to discuss multifamily housing. How do we create new developments? How do we accommodate this growth? So that's the challenge for Winchester in the longer term. Sort of the same challenge that the outlying counties have had for decades with regards to Silicon Valley and the Bay Area, that we've seen commuter traffic there move steadily out to a 2 to 3 hour distance. Same thing happening in Northern Virginia.
Well, that's very interesting, and it's a good transition to cost of living. In the CNBC report, Virginia's cost of living was the worst category, and when Governor-elect Youngkin was on, he was very concerned about the cost of living in Virginia and how that impacts economic development.
Mm-hmm.
What do you take from the report on cost of living?
Well, cost of living is a hard one because if you actually think about what you can control from a public policy perspective, there's not many levers that you can use as a state government to alter the cost of living beyond the tax and regulatory system.
Okay.
And if you change taxes significantly, you could end up in a situation where you are approaching a Kansas-like experiment, where Kansas had this hypothesis of, we're going to reduce corporate and income taxes and significantly, and that'll attract investment. It actually didn't lead to such a fiscal catastrophe that public schools went to down to 4 days a week, and then they had to reverse the tax cuts.
That's also no good. Did I remember you saying you were last on the West Coast in a beautiful place? Where were you in your last travels?
Oh, I was in Monterey, California, where we couldn't afford to live in Monterey, California, because the cost of living was so exorbitant. And even outside of Monterey, prices were as high or if not higher than Northern Virginia. It's the same type of problem. Not enough housing being built, but also that is, you know, the demand for housing is running up against the NIMBY effect, right? Not in my backyard. Yes, sure. We want more housing, but not here. Don't ruin my view. Don't draw from my water. And so what can be done in Virginia? Well, a housing strategy at the Commonwealth level, can we move some people out of Northern Virginia to outlying metro areas through investments in public infrastructure, rail, interstates, et cetera? Is the work from home model becoming transformative? And now we could move people out to even farther areas and have headquarters in the DC area. And then part of the discussion of the cost of living is what drives higher cost of living is in part the regulatory environment. If the cost of business is relatively high or perceived to be high in the Commonwealth, then businesses are going to pass that along to consumers. That is something you can smartly address by looking at inefficiencies in your policies and in your tax code, and by reforming those, lower the cost of business. And so you have positive synergies between regulatory relief and economic development, because you are now increasingly business friendly, but these are things that do not jeopardize your revenue streams in the future.
It's a funny category. My sense is that Virginia has a reasonable cost of living, and the cost of doing business is reasonable. I was in California for many years.
Yeah.
$5 a gallon gas. The government mandates who you can hire and what you have to pay them and their legality status, their immigration status. And Virginia is much less controlling.
And it's a weird category, because if you talk to people, for example, here in Hampton Roads, everybody argues one of the most attractive things about the region is its quality of life and relative low cost of living. But then you look at the indices that compare us to other regions across the United States, and they rank us relatively high. Of course, we're going to be higher than outlying areas from Dallas and Texas, right? You could go far outside of, you know, 2 hours outside of Dallas and get something very, very cheap, but then you're 2 hours outside of Dallas in the middle of Texas. I think the quality of life is something that's very hard to measure. The cost of living is typically driven by single family housing values and median rents. And that, of course, is largely out of the control of government unless you have a massive building program that's government subsidized. And I don't think we're going in that direction.
No, not going in that direction. Well, let's shift gears once again. The Commonwealth has a surplus.
Yes, it does. It has
the governor-elect had a plan. His day one plan was to do some interesting things in terms of rebates or cutting the grocery tax or the car tax, you name it. What's your sense on the surplus, and what's our best use of this valuable resource that doesn't come along every day?
Yep. First of all, I would argue that we are in a generational position with regards to the surplus for the state. And yes, there's lots of ideas out there that we could do a grocery tax cut on day one, or give everybody a $500 check on day one. And some of those are doable, right? We can rebate a portion of the surplus triggered by economic conditions. So if you want to give everybody a $1,000 check, don't give it to them all at once. Stage it to make sure that you don't evaporate the surplus and then you have a recession and you're in a much worse fiscal position. But also, this surplus provides us an opportunity to take a very hard look at the tax code, to look at taxes and fees that have grown up over the last 100 years and still exist on the books, but impede business growth in the state. If you have a bunch of nuisance taxes that were used to pay off Civil War debt that are still levied at the locality.
Excuse me? Is that yes. The BPOL or whatever it's called?
Yeah, that's the Business Professional Occupational License Tax. We have taxes on machinery. We have all these little nuisance taxes that reforming is going to be difficult because they're one of the few revenue sources that local governments independently control. But that also means with 133 cities and counties that can levy those taxes in Virginia, if you have multiple locations, you can face wildly different rates and bases. So if we want to have a conversation about economic development, we could say, look, when's the last time we had a conversation about the income tax and its rates in Virginia? When's the last time we've had a conversation about the sales tax? And instead of incremental changes to whittle away at revenue to essentially draw down the surplus, maybe we could think about the surplus or a portion of it as a way of making an investment in the tax code to set up a business-friendly environment for the future.
It's an exciting opportunity. Sort of leads to the next question or the next discussion about the Virginia Way. I really did enjoy your article. That's what got me started. The discussion about the Virginia Way, very interesting. I think there are a number of things about our Commonwealth that are special, that make us unique. Our history, our democracy, our fiscal discipline. We have a constitutionally balanced budget, right?
Yes. If you listen to politicians in the past, they referred continually to the Virginia Way, right? We may disagree, but we're going to try to disagree in a civil manner. You may have a different policy position, but that does not mean you are my enemy. You are, to use a modern term, you're, a communist, a socialist, a fascist, right? We toss these pejoratives around without thinking about what they actually mean. That means that we can disagree and agree to disagree, but at the end of the day, we have to sit down and come to solutions, because that's what we're here for in Virginia. The balanced budget requirement provides some measure of sanity that's missing from the federal government, right? If you give a teenager a credit card and you don't tell them the spending limit and say it's emergency use only, but don't define emergency use, all of a sudden 7-Eleven becomes emergency use, right?
Cheetos are an emergency.
Right.
Snort Twinkies if you can find them.
Right. And then when you get the $2,000 bill, you go, what, why did you buy this? And well, it was an emergency. My friends were hungry, or, I had a date with, somebody and I needed to go to the movies. And that binding budget constraint provides a framework for which conversations have to happen and trade-offs need to happen. So we are arguing that we have more in common than we have differences. We all believe in the idea of a commonwealth. Therefore, we need common conversations about that wealth.
It's refreshing. I think we're the model for governance. I wish every state had a balanced budget, which raises a little bit of a question in my mind. When the governor-elect was on, he said we have a surplus, which means we've overtaxed people. What I'm hearing you say is maybe we could fine-tune our tax system with this bounty and make the system better for the future instead of dribbling out a couple hundred bucks here or there that wouldn't make any difference to each individual person.
Right. So if you think about the budget surplus, some of it is because we had conservative revenue projections. So if you are making a budget and it is 2020 and you're looking forward to 2021 and you're sitting there after this significant economic shock, you are probably very wary about your spending. So you tend to be very conservative in your revenue projection. So when the economy recovers quicker than you expected, you get more revenue. That's one reason. Another reason is the federal government sending a lot of money to states. And we have the tax structure in Virginia largely has not changed. So that suggests that we have an uptick in economic activity, especially when you think about how well retail trade has done. In other words, consumers have been extraordinarily resilient during the pandemic, and spending is much higher than it was pre-pandemic levels. So people are spending much more, so you get more sales tax revenue. So we have to ask ourselves, are we overtaxing people? What does this mean if the economy slows down or enters a downturn? Does this mean that we cut taxes now, but we set ourselves up for vulnerability in the future? So you can do both, right? You can say, look, we have this large fiscal deficit. We can reduce the tax burden cautiously, but there's also an opportunity to reform the tax system to make public investments that everybody agrees need to happen without increasing the downstream vulnerability of the state government to economic downturns.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Robert. Bob McNabb, Professor, Director of the Dragas Center for Economic Analysis and Policy in the Strom College of Business, that's a mouthful, at Old Dominion University. I hope to see you next trip to Tidewater. Thank you very much for your time. For our audience, please Google 2021 State of the Commonwealth Report. It will pop up in your browser and pull it up and look at it. Look at one of the summaries. Don't hit print unless you have a lot of paper in your printer, because it's a doozy. Thank you, Professor Bob. Have a great day. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining today's episode of The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square. It has been a record year at Capital Square. In just the first half of the year, Capital Square acquired $565 million of real estate for 1031 exchange, DST programs, Opportunity Zone funds, and the Apartment REIT. The firm will acquire well over $1 billion of real estate this year for investment programs. And several investment programs have been taken full cycle. That is, when their properties have been sold, and many have been sold for record prices. This year has been off the chart for real estate investment in spite of the pandemic. For more information about Capital Square, contact me at lrogers@capitalsquare1031.com or 877-626-1031. Please join me, Lewis Rogers, same time next week when we discuss cutting-edge real estate topics of interest locally and nationally. Invest locally, invest nationally, invest with Capital Square on a tax-advantaged basis.
Living in the sweet Virginia breeze.
The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors, LLC, is broadcast as an information service and includes opinions as to buying, selling, and holding various investments. However, the host, Lewis Rogers, is not licensed to give any financial, tax, or other investment advice or recommendations. Accordingly, any data and information discussed is provided for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended to be an offer or solicitation to invest in any particular investment. You should never make an investment decision based solely off the information discussed on this broadcast. If you are seeking investment, tax, or legal advice, you should consult with a registered investment advisor, financial, tax, or legal professional of your choosing. content. Opinions and views expressed on this broadcast are opinions and views based on research gathered through what we believe to be reputable sources. Although we believe these sources to be accurate and reliable, in no way do we represent or guarantee the accuracy thereof, nor the accuracy of the statements made on this broadcast. Listeners should independently verify all claims on this broadcast and conduct their own due diligence before investing in any securities or investments, including any mentioned on this broadcast. Investing in securities is highly speculative and carries a high degree of risk.
Living in the sweet Virginia breeze. Sweet Virginia.